Sora, now my hurry my to the Aotearoa Guitar Show, where we catalog, explore, interview, and discuss all things guitars in Aotearoa, New Zealand. This is a show that will be highlighting and exploring the guitar players, makers, builders, and breakers of Aotearoa, New Zealand. I hope you'll join me on this journey as we talk to some interesting people, learn the historical facts and fictions about the guitar playing in New Zealand, and learn about some new bands and new music. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Glenn Evans of Mr. Glenn's Pickups. So without further ado, let's talk to Mr. Glenn.
Hey, mate.
Hey, how are you, Glenn?
Good.
Hey, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
No worries. You know what? I just was like 10 minutes early and I've sat down and I played the guitar. How often does that happen? Brilliant.
Yeah, can't get much better than that. How's Muriwai today?
Oh, beautiful, beautiful day. Yeah, the lovely day on the beach this morning with the dog and it was just really nice.
Yeah, so I just wanted to chat with you today, ask you a few questions, see where that leads us to. And yeah, I'll go ahead and kick it off. You are an immigrant, as I assume from your website, as am I. You're from Wales originally?
I am, yep. Oh,
fantastic. Yep.
I mean, I've been here 18 and a bit years. And to be honest, I think I was always a Kiwi. I don't think I ever quite fitted in, you know. I was the guy wearing shorts and jangles when it wasn't quite appropriate to. So,
yeah, totally understand. Can relate as well.
Hey, so tell me. Sorry, I'm going to interview you now. tell me about this podcast. What's the plan? What's it all about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there is, and you've been doing some of this yourself as well, as I've learned. I think there's a lot of talent here in the country, both on the actual playing side as well as the building side, that is just not that well known in the world. So I'm trying to catalog a lot of that. I intend to talk to many players as well as historical figures as well, who may not be playing anymore, but they have played in the past and recorded and or built in the past. I'm trying to track down whoever might be the Jansen expert for one as well. So I have a 620 that needs to be restored sitting down here, and there's a lot of people that are very, very into those amps. I see one in the background there for yourself. Yeah.
What I did with.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think if I can swing it, I might try to talk to Clary, who's actually super local to me, I found out. So I was going to reach out and have a chat there. So yeah, just kind of a cataloging and a way to kind of put some of this out to the world from what I've seen so far here in New Zealand, which has been amazing. The community's just huge and great. So yeah.
Yeah. We all know each other.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Clary's been through that amp a couple of times.
Yeah.
The first time he really needed to, and the second time he didn't really need to because he'd already done it a few years
previously.
But not lovely, lovely bloke. And they're really, for the nuts and bolts of the insides of them, there's not really a greater authority.
Nice.
Talk to Simon Gottlieb as well.
Yes.
Simon Gottlieb.
On my list. Yep.
Uh-huh. Your other guy, I suppose.
Yep.
For the ins and outs and nuts and bolts, I'm not sure about the history because he's a young fella like me. But Clary was, yeah, Clary knows all those people who were involved in making them.
Oh, that's great. That's perfect.
There's a real philosophy for repairers. I repaired guitars for 25 years, mm-hmm. and there's an instinct that a lot of us have keeping that as original as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, don't change stuff. But sometimes the customer wants you to change stuff. So that's fine. It's their guitar.
Yep.
You know, you've got to work that one out. And it's hard because you often see vintage stuff especially stuff that guitars from the early 70s, so stuff that was about 15 years old in the 80s, you know, as well as its lowest value point.
Yes.
You know, you'll get stuff. Oh, it's got a brass nut now. It's got this. Someone's ragged it out for a super distortion. I don't look at that and go, oh, isn't that a terrible thing? Because that was that customer's decision at the time.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I'd rather see something that's been modified and mucked with at different points in its history than something that's never been played.
Yeah. I think if it's almost better when you get it along with a bill of lading, right? Like, here are the things that have been changed at certain times. And the other thing that I like to see is when something comes with all of its original parts in a little baggie. That's actually nice too, because, you know, there's still the opportunity to measure those and see if they are, you know, bound for the landfill, or if they're actually something worth keeping around for another project or something along those lines. So, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So hey, I had a look at your YouTube channel last night, and I really liked it.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, there's well, you've got 31 followers now. You had 30 would be 30 before when I got there. or subscribers, I should say.
Yes.
Like, really cool. It's like, that algorithm needs to discover you.
I really like
the stuff on it. I watched all three. I thought, you know, usually I would just have a little quick look and glance and go, oh yeah, that's what they're, but actually they're really, it's really cool stuff.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'm on my own learning journey, and I'm trying to share that as I go through it. So that's kind of a passion. I'm a constant and forever tinkerer and autodidact as well. So it's why not share some of that with the rest of the world? So that's been my kind of drive behind that. So thank you. I greatly appreciate that.
But isn't YouTube great for that? Because people, you know, you've got a curious mind and you can't stop it learning stuff.
Exactly.
And isn't that a great way to get an outlet for that, I suppose?
It really is. And it's nice hearing some feedback from folks and hearing about other people that have run into some of the similar problems, like with the SM57 and the fakes. That one has done amazingly well as far as views go, because I think a lot of people are like, is this a real microphone from the real manufacturer? And so they start looking, and it's nice that they can find that and figure out whether or not they have it or not.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
First thing I did was to trot down to the workshop, grab the 57, and give the end a twiddle.
Yep. Yeah.
I knew it did.
Yeah.
I just had to go.
Yeah, I have a day job coworker who did the exact same thing. He was like, now I have like 5 microphones I have to go check. So thanks a lot, but also thanks a lot. So exactly. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm enjoying putting it together. We've got the stack more to go. Some fun stuff like creative ways to repair Tolex is on the map as well. So,
I know someone. Have you got anyone to talk to about that?
No.
What's his name? Just moved down south, repairs, does recovering amps. His name has gone, but I'll send it to you later.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I've got a long list of people to chat with, which is great. That's going to be a lot of fun, I think. So getting to know some of these folks and hearing what they're about and how they're getting on here. So if you have some time there, I'll shoot some questions at you. So you build pickups, but you also do restores and rebuilds of pickups?
Oh, pickups, yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so if you have not yet, but only pickups. You know, I used to do everything, but now I'm just doing pickups, so I don't touch guitars, and nobody can make me.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's good to know that you're focused solely on pickups now. I have one of your Cloud Nines in one of my guitars, and love it. It's in the neck, and just sounds so sweet. It's just like the perfect pickup, but has the growl when I bring that volume knob up as well, which is, yeah, it's so much better than any of the other pickups that I've had in there. So it's great. Yeah. So I'm going to guess that building new is probably more straightforward than repairing, but I'm assuming that repairing or restoring pickups has its own fun challenge to it. Can you tell me a little bit about what that looks like compared to building new?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on what's there. Often you don't have to rewind them. You know, often it's where, because this we're talking about wire that's, I mean, it's stupidly small. I mean, I've got a video on YouTube where I'm standing down by the sea.
Yeah, it's a great
there's an island 1.5 kilometers away, and that's how much wire is in a Strat pickup. So you can imagine how thin it must be to fit, you know, to fit into space the size of your finger. Uh-huh. 1.5 case. So so it can break. You know, there you go. And funnily enough, I've just had done a couple of repairs this morning, and it with humbuckers where the wire from the winding goes to another thin little wire, mm-hmm. Well, thicker, but it's still quite thin, and then that goes out.
Yeah,
and that's where that winding was joining that other wire, had just broken. One of them had been handled a bit roughly. Mm. You know, I see people picking pickups up like they were house bricks, and and like gotta be you've gotta treat it like it was a baby mouse, you know?
Yeah.
So easy to is there a word for a baby mouse?
Probably.
Anyway, we shoot off on some zoological tangent. Yeah. But yeah, so often it's a break like that. Yeah, there's also a common repairs like 70s Strat pickups. Mm-hmm. They very, very commonly start sounding really thin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a break in the winding.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask, is it like a loss of insulation or is it a full-on break in the winding?
Because this is insulated wire as well. You know, it's right. Run through a bath of lacquer or enamel or whatever it's coating. Now, those 70s ones were potted, so being they dipped in wax after they're manufactured to stop the winding, you know, vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the 70s ones were dipped in lacquer.
Ah.
Now, lacquer can degrade over time. So now I don't know exactly why it's so common with them, but that seems to be the common factor.
Interesting.
The thought is amongst quite a few people that lacquer degrades. So if you imagine it checking like you would get on an old guitar and it comes inside the pickup, so it just takes the wire out with it, or at least the insulation.
I see. Yeah.
So commonly, so you would expect that to be, so you put it on test meter, it says open circuit. So you go, oh, well, that's broken. But actually, they still make a sound.
Okay.
But it's very, very thin. Because they're sort of held together kind of by capacitance, really.
Yeah.
So they're not really working properly. Mm-hmm. So that's a very common one, is the 70s Strats. And that's kind of what I learned on.
Oh, nice. That's always good to start with the one that fails the most. So,
well, yeah. when I started winding pickups, which was in the sort of mid to late 90s, they were considered old rubbish because they got that 15-20 year thing going, that they got to the lowest point of any value. Mid 70s Strats were not considered fancy pants vintage things like they are now.
Right.
So if a pickup went, well, we'll put something, a nice new one in there. So there were lots of them around that were dead. So that's kind of what I learned on, was mucking about with cheap pickups, which is what they were. Isn't it funny how the world changes?
Yeah.
And you know, you see how many windings can I get on one of these before the whole thing bends and falls apart and all that kind of stuff, rather than trying to restore them to vintage. That was what I was into at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, you put them back to what they should be.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you play out as well as build the pickups and do your other work? Fantastic.
Yeah.
What's your go-to rig when you go and play out?
Jansen.
The Jansen? Nice.
Old Jansen bass. But that was a head, which I built into a combo.
Oh, nice.
So I wanted a half open back 1/12, just because it's much more convenient. And then I can angle it back to point up at me as well, which is what I want. I don't want it or
all out
going through my knees to the front of the house to disturb other people.
Right.
So yeah, so I use that. I'm more of a pedal guy than an amp overdrive person. So that's, you know, it clips a little, like all valve amps do, but most of the stuff comes from the floor. Currently, I'm using an Epiphone Flying V.
Nice.
Because I used to be afraid of not being flash enough for a guitar like that, and I don't care anymore. But pickup wise, you know, that's my test area. You know, doing gigs is the R&D department, because every pickup needs to be, you know, I test it in here, different amps, different pedals, different whatever. But until you get it in front of a drummer, you don't know.
Yeah. Yep. You know, I actually come from a drumming background, so
right.
I've always been guitar adjacent for a very long time. But yeah, I picked up my first guitar in like 91. But yeah, so that mix is always the interesting bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's in the
high end clarity, but also the bottom end. And it's often too much bottom end, especially neck pickup, you know? If you go to the neck pickup and you just evaporate into the swamp, then then it's not going to do you any good. So yeah, that's a good test. And practicing with a drummer and bass player, really cool. But with a gig, you know, they've done a few gigs at every prototype, and you're in different rooms in different situations, and then you start really getting an idea of it. And not only that, but it's the feel of it.
Nice.
Now, as an amp guy, you'll know that, that you plug into a transistor amp or you plug into a valve amp and it feels different under your fingers.
Yep.
And you can't quite ever explain that to a non-guitar player. But pickups feel different, you know? And that's the thing, you know, you need to feel like you've got that dynamic thing that you can tickle it or you can dig in and it's going to be a completely different beast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
You can only really tell if you're too loud with the people, you know, and you can really feel how you can. So I like to back off. As soon as the singer opens his gob, I'm backing off because I'm sharing his frequencies.
Yeah.
He's kind of more important than me, which is a shame, but that's how the world is. So I need, you know, you need to be able to do that without dancing on pedals.
Yep.
For the whole gig. So
yeah, that actually brings up another point I was going to ask you about. So two things. One was, I, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's said about different pickups pairing well with certain guitars, like a fine wine and potato or cheese, whichever. Do you think that that's true, or do you feel that there's other specific amps that should be paired with a specific pickup?
It's marketing. it doesn't. It's like saying, "What is a good sound?" Now, I don't know. It's good for what?
Right.
You know. And listen, I think a great example of that is "It's Not Unusual" by Tom Jones. Yeah. There's a guitar that goes wee 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 wee, and which allegedly is Jimmy Page doing a session. But anyway, it's a horrible, horrible guitar sound, but it's perfect on that record. So what's a good sound?
Right.
Yeah. So so I don't really say, I wouldn't say, oh, you should use this type of pickup with mahogany or with a scale length or what have you, because we don't know what that customer is trying to achieve.
Right.
So, you know, a Telecaster is a good example. You know, people want to achieve quite different things with Telecasters. You know, some people do want the really thin, like a 70s Tele, which has that kind of ice picky thing, which you might want to use it for funk. Whereas I think probably most modern people now don't want that for a Tele, or they don't want a Tele to play country. If you look at Fenders or Fenders more modern demos of Telecasters, these people are not playing country.
Right.
You know? So you go, okay, well, they've done their research.
Yeah.
So, and I sell more, my biggest selling pickup is a Tele pickup. It's the Cruel Mistress, but it's not a pingy, jingy, jingy sort of Tele pickup. It's got a bit more girth.
Right.
And it'll happily rock. And I think it's people who bought a guitar for the looks, and let's face it, they are cool.
Sure.
And they feel the sound isn't with them, so they want to change that. So I think, yeah, what's a good sound? I don't know.
It's in the ear of the beholder.
I know exactly what I prefer, but that's not necessarily a good sound. It's just my preference.
Sure.
So I think it would help. I think it's nice for people to have help buying pickups. Information is very hard to come by, but it's not quite as simple as mahogany, therefore this.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I have on my website a kind of help thing for buying, but it's simply two questions, really. You know, what have you got and what you're trying to do? And then I reply as a human being rather than an algorithm
right
making it up. So
yeah, no, that's actually really, really cool. And I'm, again, being the tinkerer that I am, I'm always wanting to try something that somebody might in the marketing might feel like is unusual or not right, just to see myself what that might produce. So I totally get it. Following on to that, though, there's a question I had in my head about people moving more away from actual amplifiers and more into the computer realm and plugins and IRs and all of these, even the Helix and the various other Tonex and the various other pedal based modeling platforms. Do you think the needs, or do you feel, or have you seen any changes that you would make to the pickups in order to accommodate that usage of technology, or is it pretty much a straight crossover and they'll dial in their tone via the modeling setups? Just curious about that one.
Yeah, no. It's really, I think that modeling setup is so malleable, so easily malleable that, yeah, I think leave it to those guys at that end to change things. You know, and I think it's great. I think that modeling of the whole thing is fantastic, especially if you're touring, if you can have consistency. You know, every gig you're going to have pretty much the same thing, especially if you're using in-ears or what have you. Great, you know. But interestingly, parallel to that, the resurgence in pedals and valves and stuff. It's interesting, isn't it?
Because it really is.
Because it's almost this dichotomy, you know, what kind of player are you? You know, are you a fractal or a Fender Twin? What are you going to do? You know?
Well, yeah, it is really, really interesting. And I feel like there's too much debate on it when it's really all about like the whole concept of shut up and play, you know, let's have a good time kind of thing. And let's create, and, you know, whatever is accessible to you, especially with a lot of people maybe in more close housing now. So you're not going to rock in with a Fender Twin and, you know, into your apartment and have anything less than the police called on you within the next 5 to 10 minutes. So I think it all has its place. And I think it's just fun to watch for me. So just to see kind of what's going on. Like I'm all about the valves at this point and what I can do with those and what new things I might be able to build with those, because it's, I kind of like the retro, you know, like in another life, I probably would have been a steampunk kid, you know? So, but this is kind of where I've landed and I do enjoy that. But yeah, I mean, excellent perspective on that and the modeling bits. And I think you probably hit the nail on the head with like for touring, it makes total sense to grab a little box and throw it in a bag and off you go and you plug into front of house and you're good. Yeah.
No, I think there are quite a few aspects of this, I think, even for home stuff, for recording, but then also for in the amp world, for like, if you haven't got, I mean, I used to own a guitar shop in the UK, yeah, with a lot of secondhand gear. And so, you know, I'm very familiar with what an old Twin sounds like, or a JCM 800 or what have you, but not everybody is. So how do you find out? How do you find out if that sort of sound is your thing, you know? Or not, or what different sort of cabinets, and I think it's just a great way to learn that, you know, that you might go, oh well, yeah, I'm definitely a JCM 800 sort of player, but yeah, I know about a quad though because of the punchiness, you know. Whereas, you know, I think I've had the benefit of trying a lot of those, and in fact, gigging with a lot of those things, you know. I really like a half open back 1x12, you know. I like it flapping around a little bit,
right.
You know, whereas a quad, have you ever done any, do you play out?
Yeah, I don't play out, no. But yeah, like I said, being adjacent, I've had, last band I was in ages ago had full stack actually. So, but yeah, which it moves mountains. But yeah, I mean, a quad has that kind of almost a boominess to it. And having that close back makes a big difference. That I actually built a 2x12 myself and I put a full close back on it. And I love it, but when I do any recording with it, I have to drop the bass massively because the whole back baffle is just reverberating with the speakers. So it's nice when it's in the room with me, but when I'm, you know, trying to mix it into something, I have to bring that bass way down on the guitar signal. So
you're creating quite a lot of air pressure in there.
Yeah.
And also what I've used to find with a quad is it's a cannon. So you've got the punch going right across the room.
Yeah.
And you've only got to sound a little to the side, and it's quite a bit quieter. Which is just what I mean. What? Why would you do that to a sound guy?
Yeah,
you know, this poor person's got this thing blasting guitar across him. You know, so yeah, I just like that. And I think with a half open back, you do get a little bit of resonance for that from that enclosure, but it still lets that speaker.
Yeah, bleeds out a bit some of that. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just a personal, again, that's a personal thing, you know. I mean, yeah, I'm a big Malcolm Young fan, and so I shouldn't be knocking Marshall 4x12. You know?
Yeah, I mean, everything has its place, right? So, yeah. Like, I couldn't imagine the Malcolm Young sound through I don't know, a Selmer or even Fender, really, I think. I mean, you could probably still make it work because it's in the player mostly, but yeah, you know what I'm saying, so.
Yeah, and it is in the player, isn't it?
It is.
This is the start. That's the start of the signal chain, you know, it's the player.
Yeah, absolutely.
And from repairing guitars, I'd find, you know, I could have done like major work on a guitar. I remember doing one for Chet O'Connell, who's a great player worth talking to as well. And I refretted his Strat. So I spent some time with this guitar and I thought, you know, lovely. And then Chet comes in to pick it up and he plays it and it sounds completely different. I mean, at least 800 times better because he's a fantastic player. But really, you know, it felt good to me, but in a different, obviously differently to him. You know, and that's, I always find that interesting.
Yep.
You know, what would I sound like with Brian May's rig?
Right. Sound like you.
Unfortunately, I think that's the truth.
Yeah. I did want to ask you, what was your actual first guitar and amplifier that you had?
Oh, right. It was, I was 16. I'd been saving up for a motorbike and I'd run my mate's house and he linked me his brother's record of High Voltage of AC/DC, right?
Nice.
You know, like people will lend other people stuff when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And that completely changed my mind. And I bought a guitar off him that his uncle had made and put together from bits.
Nice.
I didn't even know what it was, really. And I don't have it anymore. And I'm sure it was pretty bad because there weren't guitar kits available back then.
Yep.
And as an amp, I had an old Radiogram with an oval speaker or valve Radiogram. And that was awful. And I couldn't get distortion out of it. And I bought the cheapest distortion pedal I could find, which at the time was a Ross distortion.
Okay.
Which now suddenly become really cool.
Yeah. I have a book with a picture of that in it. So yes.
And they've been re-released and they're all being made by Josh Thingamy. And
yeah.
Anyway, so that was that. And that was awful. So certainly nothing to be proud of in any way.
Nice. Yeah. Similar to that, what would you say is the one guitar or amplifier that got away that you wished you had back, or is there one?
Yeah, there is, and everyone's got the story, eh?
Sure.
No, it was I had a pre-CBS Duosonic.
Oh wow,
it was really nice, and it was great for that. If you're trying to write songs or what have you, and you get stuck, you pick the guitar up, it's completely different from all the others. And it had the narrowest neck ever.
Wow.
It was great, yeah. And I sold it very, very cheaply when I came to New Zealand.
Ah, gotcha. Yep. But yeah, it seems like moving will do that to you a lot.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't take... I shipped everything else because I had like half a container or whatever you get. And, sure. And you know, amps and guitars and stuff. For some reason, I sold that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the one that got away. Yeah.
Yeah, but there you go.
So what are some of your favorite Aotearoa artists that you're currently listening to or your favorite to go back to?
Well, the last album I actually listened to, which was this morning, is Warren Mendonca, Blackstrap Blues. Have you heard him?
I have not, but yeah, that's going in the playlist. So
absolutely. Yeah, he lives in West Auckland, actually.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you have to hear it. He's I've actually had a couple of lessons off him online as well, a couple of guitar lessons to try and get me out of what do they call it? The plateau or something. But it's actually a rut, you know. It's not I'm not at the top of a hill, I'm at the bottom.
It sounds better as a plateau rather than being like somewhere down in the gutter. Yeah. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, and I just needed a bit more information.
Nice.
To pull me up. Now I need to apply that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It should take what Warren Mendonca, it just
That's great.
Absolutely. Yeah, mind-blowing player, lovely bloke.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll add that one to the list as well. How did you get involved in building the Tumautanga pickup?
That's all right.
Yeah.
Well, look at this. I've got my Alien Weaponry t-shirt on.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I saw that.
Yeah, I like them. I like the band. And we had a conversation about maybe making them a pickup. And then time passed and we forgot. And then Neil, who's the manager and the dad, contacted me. They were actually on their way back from the US. I think he was actually at the airport and had nothing to do. So he can't go in touch with me. I said, should we get this rolling? Yeah, sure. So I went up there because they're like 2.5 hours up the road. And so we went up and had a listen and a chat. And then cool, came home, went some pickups, went back, and then went back and forth a few times. And their rehearsal space is actually there where they live as well. So it was literally on their kitchen table, swapping pickups and going off and plugging in the Marshall, because he's a proper amp guy as well.
Nice. Very nice.
Which is good. Yeah. Because a lot of those metal guys are, you know, are laptops rather than big amps. So that was great. And of course, the drums there as well. So you can, you know, put it all together. So that a few trips back and forth. And yeah, we ended up with something that everyone was happy with. And then it was the design of it. What the look, you know, it needed to look different. Otherwise, it's just got somebody's name. You know?
Right.
So that came from them. I kind of gave them an idea of what we could do and how that an insert could be put in for later. But I didn't want to, you know, the design, the look of it is theirs. It's not not mine.
Yeah.
So laser cut those inserts and stain them, and I had a bit of mucking about with them actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we even had it as a available to the public, he took it off on a European tour. So we had, I think I loaded two of his guitars with them, and there was a couple of guitars that were meeting him in Belgium, I think. And I had their touring tech fit them.
Nice.
And then, so they did that tour with those pickups.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, you go, well, that's a pretty good road test, isn't it?
Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah.
Comes out of that, okay, then we've won this one.
Yeah.
And then we sort of made it public just before they had a couple of gigs supporting Guns N' Roses.
Very nice.
So, again, you go, wow, pretty cool.
That's pretty special. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great, actually. I really enjoyed that. Because, you know, because I grew up reading the guitar magazines. And it's kind of like you're living your fantasy as a kid.
Yeah.
Of doing that.
Yeah, and it seems to me that's a very Leo Fender style approach where, you know, listening and then going back and tweaking and then bringing it back to the artists and having them play again through it and getting feedback from them. So that when I was reading your blog post on this pickup on your website, that's really what it reminded me of, is some of those stories of Leo going back and forth with some of those players and getting that feedback loop going so that it's built into what the player needs. And then, of course, records get made and you know, next thing you know, everybody's heard it. So yeah, that's pretty special.
But that's what I do with any pickup that isn't for me, if you see what I mean. Like my low powered Telecaster pickup, for instance, it's for players who do stuff that I don't do. So I with those, I always had test pilots. So when I was repairing guitars, obviously from that, I've got to know, I know a lot of players, a lot of professional players as well. So I'll often give pickups to people and say, could you test that? And then tweak it and change, swap it and tweak and swap until we got it right. And then they have that pickups theirs, you know, and so they end up with a pickup that really suits them.
Yeah.
So like the Cloud 9, which you have, that was for me, that works in my world. So I didn't really need anyone else there. I just need to swap it in a few different guitars and put it in a few gigs. But yeah, other ones like the Pandora Telecaster one, that's the one down from the Cruel Mistress Powerwise. That one was one that was, the Duchess, not the Pandora. I do one called the Pandora, which is for Esquires. So if you've got a one pickup telly, but you've got a three-way switch,
gotcha. Yep.
So what you have there is three separate windings.
Oh, nice.
So you wind it off, basically. Mm-hmm. So you've got my Cruel Mistress at the more powerful end, then you tap off some windings, then you've got another one and you tap off more, and then you've got, I kind of call it a gold foil, but it's just not a gold foil. Mm-hmm. It's completely different, really. But that middle setting has now its own pickup.
Okay.
Because I sent the Pandora off to a guy in the UK in Leeds in Yorkshire, and he loved that middle position, and after talking to him, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I can make you one of those. And he's in a Bruce Springsteen tribute band.
Okay,
being Bruce with Yorkshire accent, and so he wanted that. So we're, oh, cool. Well, we can do that. So that went to him, and it's him that does the demos on that, because that was kind of all led, that was driven by him, really.
Okay.
That particular pickup. But of course, that you know, there's plenty of people who want that. That's actually a really good sound. It was a bit of a gap in my tele range anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's super interesting. And so you said earlier that you have questions on the site where you can help maybe direct people to the right pickup. And then you also provide feedback. And so what I wanted to do right here, right now, is show you a guitar I have and then basically talk through maybe some options for it. And like I said, I have what I like to call Wade's home for forlorn toys. Mm-hmm. The PRS is a signature model. I don't even think PRS claims these anymore. They've just kind of shuffled it off into the annals of something they hope everybody will forget for some reason. It's a fantastic guitar. I love it. The triple humbucker is a little strange for me because I've never had anything like that before. And I did get to the point where I lowered the middle pickup because I would keep hitting it with a pick attack. So that was something that I can either change my playing style or I can lower the middle pickup. But I always kind of wondered, like, what could I do with a different combination of pickups that I could put in here? And I've always liked the P90 sound. So I've always thought maybe the middle pickup could be a P90 and I could go with something like that and obviously change the wiring for the switch to accommodate that. But yeah, ideas, options.
What does the wiring do now? What's the switch do?
Great question. So typical bridge neck for each end of the throw. And the middle actually is a blending of a bridge and the center pickup. And okay. I think it throws it out of phase. I haven't actually looked at the wiring super close at this point, but it gives it a much more of a single coil sound when you put it in that mode. So a little more twangy, a little more of that single coil bit to it.
It's a little different from the Gibson three pickup ones. You know, I think if you're going to have three pickups, then a few more options are probably, and this is not me talking pickups, I'm talking about the wiring, really. Yeah. Those switches, the name of which I can't remember, that GMAC do, give you more positions.
Yes.
Because it'd be quite nice, you three pickups, to have like the Strat type setup.
Yep.
You know, where you've got those sort of quite logical combinations, really. And then you've got four knobs, so you could have a volume for each pickup, or you could have a master volume and three on a tone for each pickup, or, you know, and that's more up to what you're likely to use there than,
sure.
But I'd look at those options for first, really.
Yep.
That could really help you out. Now, what do you want it to do? What do you play? What sort of music?
Yeah, so I'm a little all over the board. So I do like playing more bluesy stuff, but what's the word? More blues rock, I guess, is a good way to put it. But I also go pretty heavy sometimes as well. So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle of that. So anywhere from the AC/DC style tone to, I'm not going to say Alien Weaponry heavy-wise, but up there, more of a hardcore sound as well, and sometimes a pop punk style sound. So somewhere in between those three. And I know I don't necessarily need one guitar to be able to accommodate all of that, but the closer I can get to that, the happier I think I'll be.
I think trying to make one guitar accommodate all that is, as long as you can accept the fact that it won't do everything well.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point.
And you find out which bit it does that you love, and you do that with it.
Yep.
Now, no one guitar is going to do everything. You can't have a Strat Paul or a Lesecaster or whatever. You know, you're just it's just silly to try in some ways. But anyway, having said that, it does sound like to me that because my humbucker size P90, the Black Sand, it's a P90 in the fact that it's constructed like a P90, but it's not the same as like a vintage Gibson P90.
Okay.
because you physically cannot fit that into that size.
Right.
You know, because they are a very flat, very wide coil, the old P90s are,
okay.
like a soap bar. And they fit in the soap bar, they physically won't fit in. So what you do with a humbucker size one is it's wound with thinner gauge wire.
I see.
Which changes stuff. If actually look at the K-ohms, it looks pretty similar, but actually they're quite different sound
yeah.
because it's different wire. Ohms not being a measurement of power.
Right.
But that's another rant for another time. But they're actually quite suited to a lot of styles. So for instance, Warren Mendonca, who I mentioned earlier on, has got a set in ES335.
Yep.
But then also Jimmy Christmas from D4 has a set. So he's got a much more aggressive punk type.
Yep.
That angry shouting at you sound.
Yep.
So it's a different, like a normal P90 will have a woody clonk going on. So there isn't quite they're more clear than that.
Okay.
So that sounds to me like a good option for you for actually quite a few things. Because they'll grit up
yep.
in that lower regain Malcolm Young way, but then you've got a nice bit of neck pickup clarity too. I mean, I've been doing the last half dozen gigs with one in the neck and a Cloud 9 in the bridge.
Okay.
So I can have, and they feel, because they're a single coil, they feel like a single coil. You have that less compression and that slightly more dynamics.
Yeah.
So definitely, I'm thinking of one of those. Or two of those, or even three of those. I'm not sure about you. Yeah, I'm wondering if that would be a good neck and bridge. I'm almost thinking of a Filtertron for one of them as well, but probably just because
that would look like for sure.
Yeah. That's probably why. And I'm also thinking, oh, there's three pickups. Let's have three different ones.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gone through my mind as well. It's like, how weird can I make this already weird guitar? So,
although Filtertrons are a different physical size, you can get the surrounds that are adapters.
That'll fit in, yeah.
They're a nets longer, but they fit nearly all humbucker yep. out. Nice. And there's the surround. But, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure if I'm saying that to the look.
Right.
And then bridge pickup. I'm not sure really. I mean, so how you're going to go with the bridge pickup?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with it?
So my other guitar that I have, the Cloud 9 in the and the neck, I have a Dirty Fingers in the bridge, and it's not the newer one. It's when they first reintroduced them back in, I think it was the late 90s or early 2000s, which has a little bit of a different sonic feel to it from what I've been reading, at least, because I haven't purchased one of the new ones. But anyway, I've had it sitting in a box for ages, and so I finally pulled it out and threw it in this LTD ESP single cut, and I love it. It actually sounds wonderful. It sounds really good in that guitar, and it's obviously quite hot, and I do kind of like the way that feels when I kick it in. So I think I would probably lean towards that, just because I really do enjoy having that kind of sound in a single cut guitar specifically. So, yeah,
I would. I'm thinking more Cloud 9 bridge.
Okay,
as you can, they're so like I use them in our covers band, and I don't like changing guitar mid gig.
Right,
you know, I kind of think who do I think I am?
Yeah,
you know, it's all right for the edge, but I'm just a bloke in a pub in Auckland. It's just ugh. So I like to keep the same guitar all night. So it's a pickup that'll do a lot of different stuff. You know, I want to do the more backed off stuff towards the beginning, and then at the end when we're doing Sandman and Killing in the Name,
right.
You know, I want to be able to. I like it sort of the feeling like I'm just barely hanging on to it, kind of
nice.
You know, and it'll run away, it'll run off on its own if I don't.
Yeah. That actually, and from my experience with the bridge Cloud 9, I think that makes total sense to me too. So
yeah,
sounds like the right kind of thing.
Go Cloud 9, Black Sand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That actually.
And then your wiring. Yes. You're going to have to figure out, you're a wiring guy anyway, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of options there. And I think the switch that you're talking about, they're made in the UK, if I remember correctly, and they have eight positions on them. I put one of those in my son's guitar I was going to put it in my LTD, but the cavity for the wire in those ESP, the LTD, it's a 265, is tiny compared to like a Les Paul. But I think it's a thinner body. So that's one of the reasons they probably made the channel so much smaller. And so trying to get, you know, 8+ wires through there was shielded, it was almost almost impossible. So I just decided, you know, it's way easier. I'll just put that in his guitar and I'll just keep mine here and maybe put some push pulls in the volumes and tone knobs. And okay. And so, yeah, I bought the push pulls, but they're sitting in a drawer. So I'll get to it one day. But
here's another idea. Keep your three-way switch.
Mm-hmm.
Wire the three-way switch like a Les Paul, ignoring the middle pickup, yeah?
Yep.
And have one of those pots as a volume control for just the middle.
Oh, yeah.
So you can introduce the middle pickup.
Bring it in with
the setting.
In those three settings, yeah.
You might have to change it in and out legs of the volume pot. You know how you've normally got, you go in the outside leg and out the middle.
Yep.
But then like with a Les Paul in the middle position of the switch, you turn one volume off and the whole guitar goes off. You know that? Yeah. Well, if you wire them the other way, that doesn't happen.
Okay. Nice.
Like with a jazz bass, they're wired. So you can wire that the other way, those pots the other way, so that you can have turn that volume. So you could have that way, you could have the middle pickup on its own. Then you don't have any kind of master volume if you want to shut the whole thing off.
No, but I could potentially change it from the dual tone knobs to a single tone knob and then use the other knob to bring in the middle pickup, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes.
And that would, yeah, because I don't necessarily really need two tone knobs, especially with the shared volume. Or not the shared volume, but I could just use a single tone knob. That's totally fine. Yep. That would work for me.
But if you want to turn the whole, if you're using all three pickups and you want to turn the whole guitar off, you've got to turn two volumes down.
I see. Yep. Yeah.
If you're not gigging, it's probably not an issue.
Yeah.
But there you go. Or you can have a kill switch and you can have your Rage Against the Machine moments as well. Eh?
I could do that. I was thinking volume pedal is another option there, right? So that's another way to pull that one off. So, yeah.
And that's probably easier to do because you're not ordering another switch and mucking about with that.
Yep.
Yeah. And that'll probably work intuitively, especially if you wired it up yourself,
right? Yep.
You know, it's that's the other thing with, you know, I've done a lot of modifying of strats and there's lots of ways of changing strats, but I've also put a lot of them back to original.
Okay.
For people who've had all sorts of amazing ideas with this and that and this and that, and then actually it was pretty good to begin with.
Yep.
And very intuitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Wow, that's fantastic. Hey, I really appreciate your time. I think I don't want to keep you any longer here, but it's been fantastic talking with you. And I'll let you know as soon as I get ready to place that order, because I think I'm going to do that at some point in the very near future. So we'll get that going. So that'll be a lot of fun. And of course, I'll let you know what it turns out to sound like. So that'll be good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely keen to hear that.
Yep.
And I'm really keen to hear who else you talk to.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I've got a running list and thanks for a couple more names to add to it as well. I've been doing a lot of research, which has been actually so much fun to just, you know, start looking around, seeing who I should talk to and reading what I can about their history and then finding out about that. So it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I look forward to your continuing YouTube episodes. They're great. So it's really nice talking to these folks, except a lot of times when you're talking to the makers, it's just really dangerous for the bank account because I just kind of want to go get one of each and and do that, which is complicated. So, but yeah.
But you are clearly a very disciplined human being because you haven't told me you make pedals.
No.
Like you've got an electronics background and yet you've managed to resist that.
Yep. Yeah. I actually only own one pedal and it's one of the, it's a Korg, the ODS, I think is what it's called, which is a pedal kit that you buy, and they're using their new tube technology. So it's actually vacuum tubes that they pioneered for use in, I think, television sets. So it's only like this long and about that wide, and it's mounted right onto a service mount, right onto a circuit board. And it was just kind of a fun thing to play around with. So I got it. And it's a nice, it's a fine overdrive pedal. I think Josh did a video on the 3-Korg new tube line just recently. And it was included in that one. Wasn't one of the ones that blew him away, but it's, for me, it's an overdrive pedal. And it actually sounds pretty good. And the only thing is, it, if you stomp on it, you can get a whine that comes out of it because the pedal is somewhat sensitive, or sorry, the tube is somewhat sensitive to vibration. So it'll get a bit microphonic on you. So they send you a nice little piece of foam that you can mount it on. And I'm like, oh, it's like a little mattress for my little tube. And it's it, not really, but it's a really firm mattress apparently. So yeah, it bounces around a little bit, but for my needs at this point in time, it's fine. Yeah. Thanks again. Cool. Your stuff is amazing. And I've been super impressed. So thank you again. Thanks, Gunn. I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Hope you've enjoyed listening and or watching the Aotearoa Guitar Show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, like, ring the bell, and we'll let you know when the next one's coming hot down the ditch. And that's us.